Hey, what's going on, guys? Taxation is Theft, and we are back. And today I have an awesome guest with me. wait a minute. Dori Goikman, she is the author of Little Libertarians, which is a pretty awesome little new book. And if you saw me disappear into, I put the splash screen back up because I told you I was going to change your name, and I just realized it's not on the on the other thing. But hey, that's not going to hold us up. We're going to start talking while I get that fixed. So how's it going?
It's going well. It's always nice to see you and talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So we run into each other a few times at different conventions, but you've got this book which you gave to me at the last convention in New Orleans, and it looks pretty awesome. So it's called Little Libertarians, and right on the cover, I'll show you guys in a second. Sorry for the delay here. Right on the cover, it's got here we go. It says, "Don't hurt people and don't take their toys," which is like totally awesome. I'm holding this up to the wrong camera too. I don't know what I'm doing here. And so this is like a really cute little kid's book. Oh, and it comes with this thing with this little, like, that looks too bright. I don't know if you can see that.
That's Happy the Porcupine.
So this is pretty awesome. So I saw this and I got excited because I have in my family, I guess I've got two. I have a niece and a nephew who are just a couple years old. And of course, I want to give them all kinds of like awesome propaganda like this. I know you hate calling it propaganda, I'm sure, but that's what I like to call this stuff. It's really awesome because like there's not really a whole lot of libertarian books out there for kids. And of course, this is the stuff that kids are going to read. Like they're not going to be sitting there with like a book on Austrian economics and the Fed and all this other stuff, right? So this is like a really great place to get them started. So, awesome job with this.
Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I don't know about your kids or future kids. Mine will certainly be sitting there with a book on Austrian economics. Very, actually, in the womb. I plan on reading it to them with that like megaphone
Nice.
thing. Yeah.
Well, so the hard part with mine is I don't want to mention any names, but of course this is family, so it's not going to be difficult to track down who it is. But they're Californians. They're not very libertarian. They're very Democrat. So getting that type of book in the house is difficult. Then getting it to be read is another hurdle to get over. So, but something like this is like, I mean, like, is any Democrat going to disagree with this? Like, don't hurt people and don't take their toys? Like, well, I
I
don't
think there might be a democratic socialist out there who might disagree with
Right.
it. But generally I tried very actively. First of all, the books are not political at all. I actually have four written right now. It's just only that one has been released. But I totally tried to make them not political at all. They're much more in the vein of libertarian philosophy, because first of all, there are so many libertarians that I know that don't even vote, right? Like they don't look at libertarianism in a political way. I happen to look at it in a political way, but I think the world is a better place if there are more people who are just libertarian minded, whether they vote or don't vote, whether they're doing what they do in the private sphere or in the public. Well, actually, no, maybe less in the public sphere. But just that like entrepreneurial libertarian bent is what I'm trying to do with these books. And I think that largely comes from like the philosophy of don't hurt people and don't take their stuff or toys. And I think it is like it's something that everyone teaches kids, but the problem is they don't teach the kids by name, right? Like my materials, it's not in this book, but like for example, the concept of non-aggression, right? My materials will use non-aggression by name. Like we will call it non-aggression. Like this book, it's very openly about property rights. And I think that there's teaching that to your kids, and then there's also teaching your kids to be aware of it so that they can maybe generalize it as they get older and understand, okay, it's not just about me. It can also be about not using the laws to do things that I wouldn't personally do, right? So giving them the words and the equipment to do that.
Right. And I think that's a really good point. And I mean, there's definitely something to be said about, you know, I'm, you know, there's all kinds of like schools of thought where you don't treat a problem, whether it's a disease or a behavior, by, you know, basically sticking a Band-Aid on top of it. You change it at the core. And so, like, not even with an individual, but like with society as a whole, if society, if you know, we can create all these laws saying like, oh, if you do something bad, we're going to punish you and basically threaten people into acting nice. But if you teach people to be kind to others, then you don't even have that problem. You don't even have to write laws because people are actually conscious of you know, the cause and effect and the things that they do and how they affect other people. And so this really does this. This goes to them at a young age and kind of says, you know, don't hurt people, which is, you know, if all these people who are writing these laws had that you know, that fundamental thought, well, is this law going to hurt someone? Like, if they would think about that first and foremost before they even pass the law or before they vote on the law, or you know, or before some big pharma company hands them the law, you know, that would create a huge change in the way that everything happens. So I think this is, you know, fundamentally it's non-political, but it creates the environment for, I guess, some sort of peaceful cohabitation between people that doesn't really demand such government interference to try and correct all these problems that, of course, they can't correct.
I love the way Larry Sharp puts it. He says, you know, people don't have to be libertarian purists, right? But to use libertarianism as your guiding star, right? So to look at any given situation and think about it in a libertarian way. Oh my gosh, I feel like I wish more people could see that. And I think it is a change that's happening culturally, even if libertarian or there are different forces happening culturally right now, so who knows? But I do think, like, if you look at, you know, what's happening with decriminalization, if you looked what happened with gay marriage, if you're looking at what's happening socially with the way that we deal with, you know, adult relationships and, you know, the general feeling like most people would, you know, are much more casual about those things these days. I think those are all, you know, people can argue that it's good or bad on a personal level, but it's all evidence of a more independent minded view of the world. Like people are, the world is more, I don't want to say selfish. It's just, that's always like not the nice word, but the world seems to be becoming more self-centered in a certain way, or more focused on the individual in certain ways. There is kind of a collectivist streak in government, but maybe it's that we don't see the bigger picture. Like maybe these things are happening to on too large of a time scale, and maybe the world is becoming more libertarian in certain ways, where like, you know, 50 years ago, it was a normal thing to think maybe your neighbor should be arrested for smoking marijuana. That's not so much a normal thing now. So what changed in terms of respecting the individual? Like, is there a growing streak of libertarianism growing within all of us that we just can't see because it's happening over too long of a time scale? I mean, it's an interesting thought that I've kind of had, and I think if people use libertarianism in a more cognizant way, if they're more aware of it as their guiding principle, maybe we can kind of speed that up and go towards a more individual entrepreneurial world.
Absolutely.
Super, super deep there for a
Yeah.
second.
No, I'm just reading one of these comments that Adam posted, and he said he just voted for Ted Metz, a libertarian from Georgia. He was running for governor, and honestly, the Georgia gubernatorial debate between the three candidates was just the Dem and the Republican talking smack about each other, and Ted Metz actually having answers. And I think that really. I don't know if you have like a book on name calling. But it's you know, that's like one of those things that, you know, we it's funny. I think that's already taught to kids pretty widely, right? Don't call people names. And yet here we have Democrats and Republicans up there, the politicians, the people who want to lead the country, up there basically doing what we tell kids not to do. And you know, hey, maybe if they would have read one of these books, they wouldn't be like that. But of course, you know, and there are plenty of people, like we already know, there's so many voters who are just disgusted with the whole system because it is all just smack talking. They're tired of it, And yet somehow they keep electing these people, which is really kind of it's kind of weird. It seems completely counterproductive, but that's what happens. But I think, you know, going back to the same principle, if people were able to, you know, to understand these basic things better, then I think, you know, it would just, you know, the cream rises to the top and we don't have so many problems that we have, which are completely cultural. And I think they are totally cultural because, you know, you go to different countries and you see that, you know, the some of the things that we do that are bad are not done there, and some of the things that we do that are good are not done there.
Like sometimes the way they have toilet paper come out of the wall. Have you seen that in certain European countries? It like comes out like that instead of like that.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, I thought you were going to argue some have it coming over and some have it coming from the back.
Well, I mean, that is a domestic issue for anyone who tucks it in that way. That's a scourge of the American people for whoever tucks it in behind. But I'm saying, like, have you ever been to like a public restroom, some places in like Europe, it comes out like a napkin holder, you would have like,
oh, like single squares.
Yeah. Or like single squares or whatever. And,
oh,
like,
wow.
Like, I have some problems with Europe. Like, I don't want to, I just want my regular toilet paper. But
yeah, it's, and Mexico's got all kinds of crazy issues around that, but I'm not going to get into that because
yeah,
messy.
I stay on the resort when I go to that's my response to that.
And apparently it has to do with, I was just reading on this recently, it's the way that they design their plumbing. It's like it really has nothing to do with like their water systems or anything. It's just that they use pipes that connect at a straight T instead of the ones that are like curved in, and apparently that creates like all this problem that like creates derivative problems. That's all I'll say about that. Yeah,
toilet paper there.
But yeah, but it's like it's again, there, that's another problem where, you know, you talk about the stuff on the surface and there's really an underlying problem. And if you fix the underlying problem, and that totally relates to shitty politicians, right?
Fix the plumbing. Maybe that should be like, instead of taxation and stuff, that should be the new motto.
Right. The plumbing is clogged. But I guess that goes back to drain the swamp, which.
Oh, true. Touche.
Never happened.
Never
we couldn't drain the swamp because the pipes were clogged. So what other books do you have? You said you got a few of them ready.
Yeah, the next one. So there's only one that's printed, and that's the only one that's going to be printed for the close foreseeable future. But there's ebooks that are coming out. So the next one that's going to come out is called The Happy Porcupine. And that one is about self-defense. And by the way, all the books that are written, and that's Happy. So he's the star of that book. And I'm sure, you know, these books are for like 0 to 7 years old, maybe 8 years old if the kid's reading by themselves. But I'm sure you can imagine what that's about. I mean, he has spiky quills, and so those keep him safe. And it's about introducing the concept of self-defense and how animals, you know, there's a few different animals in there, and it's, you know, can you think of any animals with special self-defense skills? And it's not about guns. I'm not going to do a book about guns for kids, although I'm sure many of you sick people watching this would absolutely love that. I'm not doing it. You have to find someone else to do it. But, you know, it's about the concept of, okay, there's something in nature that creates self-defense, and it keeps happening through different animals. Well, you know, maybe that's a useful thing. Maybe that actually prevents a lot of violence, because, you know, an animal sees the porcupine and says, hey, those quills look pretty spiky, maybe I won't even bother to attack them, and maybe there's less violence because of that. So I'm not the biggest Second Amendment person, honestly. It's never, I understand it, I feel it deep in my heart, I feel like, you know, we should be an armed country. It's just never been my issue. But when you take it from guns to self-defense, there's something intuitive that people get about it. And I think it's important for kids to know as well. And also just the concept of, like, now schools, like, oh my God, I even remember when I started going through, like, I think it was probably, we're probably about the same age, probably around our age, when they started doing these zero tolerance things where, like, let's say a kid punches you, you're not supposed to punch
back. Don't hit back, right. Go get a teacher.
That's ridiculous.
Which is the equivalent of, Go get the cops, like, once you get out of school.
Yes.
And, yeah, exactly. And they're training you, you know. Oh, and like, I've seen, I'm sure I even got into trouble a couple times, you know, defending myself when it's like, you know, oh, someone else throws the first punch, and I get caught throwing the second punch, and now all of a sudden I'm in trouble. Well, he hit me first. Oh, it doesn't matter.
Right, it doesn't matter. You're not supposed to
hit back. That's violence. That's bad. That's so terrible. It's so funny.
There's videos of like little kids and cute dogs and whatever. There's this video of a little kid and it's circulating on just around, like not in libertarian circles, just generally. Probably some of the people watching this have seen it. And it's just this little kid, so cute, like probably 3 or 4 years old, going into this just like diatribe about how like they're not supposed to hit back if someone hits them at school. And like basically effectively in kids language, like fuck that, like I'm hitting back, like that's bullshit. And people share this video, like this video gets millions of views because there's something intuitively in our hearts that knows that that's right. Now I'm not saying that someone punched me in the face once, like when I was probably in like fifth grade, and it was a boy. He had issues. I didn't hit back because I don't know. I guess I'm not the type of person to hit back. I don't know why. Maybe I should have hit him back. I just like it didn't come to me to hit him back. If you want to be a person that doesn't hit people back, that's fantastic too. That's your right also. It's not like you have to escalate things. But to say that you don't have the right to escalate things, maybe not escalate, but to respond with equal force, I think that's ridiculous. So actually, that's something that no one rarely ever talks about. And that's completely gone on in the schools that like you're not, you know, you're indoctrinated against your own basic human rights. And it's absurd. And the fact that like two kids, like, you know, if someone can start a fight and like both kids just will get suspended for 10 days, I think is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I guess the book addresses that also.
What do you want them to do? Just curl up into a ball and hope that, you know, this kid doesn't have like crazy issues that he's going to like beat him to death, which I'm sure that like, you know, that almost never happens. But still, it's like you're conditioning. So that might not happen on the playground, but you know, when these people grow up and they, you know, they're 18, they're 20, they're 30, 40, and they get attacked, they get mugged, somebody wants their wallet, and they just say, oh, please don't hurt me. And you know, they curl into a ball, give them all their money. And you know, maybe it's a crazy person and they beat the crap out of them until they die because they're just like praying not to be hit, praying it stops instead of, you know, hitting back and preventing it. That's just absolutely insane.
Or like you mentioned before, just that whole concept of appealing to an authority. Like it's okay to be like, oh, maybe the best response isn't to hit back. Like maybe the best response is to take a second and think. Like I think that's an okay message to send, as opposed to the message to send of saying, if you hit back, you're equally responsible. You're both gonna get exact trouble. You know, that's an appeal to authority, and that's conditioning, and that's crazy.
Right, and you know, to your point about escalating, also if you know, if you're being attacked, you don't necessarily need to escalate, but if you can at least show that you're prepared to respond with force, which, you know, in the adult world is if you pull a gun out and say, leave, you're done here, you're not going to kick my ass, like, you don't need to shoot them. They'll probably get scared and turn around and leave. If you're a kid, if you put your arms up and let them know that, hey, if you try to hit me again, I will kick your ass, I will fight back, then that might deter them from continuing to fight. So it's not necessarily an escalation either. It's that's kind of the thing that we have. I think why we've gone so far down the wrong track in so many different ways. When you get stopped by the police, like most people will just let the police walk all over them. Like they're searching your car, they're giving you tickets, they're insulting you, they're assaulting you, they're doing whatever they want because they know you're not going to fight back. You're not going to do anything back because you're not going to defend yourself. You're not going to defend yourself, especially against a police officer, because you know that carries like the death penalty if you even give him like a bruise. Even though, as I like throwing out, the Supreme Court says you can use up to deadly force against a police officer if you're being unlawfully arrested, but... Separate story. That's if you survive to your trial, I guess.
Right.
But yeah, it's we've grown in, like, we've been so well conditioned into this, you know, don't fight back. And, you know, that's the whole thing about like, oh yeah, well, you know, if a police officer is kicking your ass and he's using unjust force, well, don't worry, you'll have your day in court and you'll be able to prove yourself right. And well, what is that how does that stop the scenario? How does that stop it from happening again? How does that prevent you from getting your ass beat or possibly killed? It's really that same thing. Like, oh yeah. Well, here the police is the authority, but he's the attacker. So you're going to have to wait until you can confront you can take this to another authority, which is a judge. And it's like, yeah, if you live that long. But you know, it's the same thing. We're conditioned there.
Well, it's another interesting dichotomy, because I just think of, you know, what I would teach my own kids. And like, if I were, you know, first of all, it's funny because I'm a lawyer and I know what to do with cops and not to do. And I still feel the pressure, right? So I tell everyone, and I had, when I used to do any kind of criminal work at all, like, it is ridiculous how many times I told people not to talk and they always talked every time. Everyone talks. It's there's basically very few people who like choose not to talk to the police. It's very difficult psychologically. And I think part of the difficulty is obviously the conditioning. Part of it is the fact that you're out armed. But either way, I know what to do, and I still feel that strong pressure. And I would say, in terms of, it's an interesting dichotomy, and it's the type of nuance that I think libertarians can see that I think sometimes other people have trouble seeing, is I would teach my own kids, I would say, listen, you know, if there's a cop, cooperate, but understand that you have the right not to. You know what I mean? Like, it's right. There's understand that you, when you do something, you do it out of your own volition because it benefits you. You don't do it because you have to do it. You are your own highest authority. You look at yourself and strategize what outcome is best for you. Whereas I think the lesson that's learned, and I have like parents send me, now that I started this business, I have like parents sending me like lesson plans and different weird things that like their kids were told in school. And it'll always be, the law is good, police officers are nice, and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, sure, plenty of police officers are nice, I'm sure. You know, I don't think we should go walk around shanking cops. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that they're always good. It doesn't mean that the law is always good. It doesn't mean that you should always listen. And that nuance, like, that's what I'm trying to push with these things, to whatever extent you can do that with, you know, a toddler.
Yeah. And that's actually, you just reminded me of this friend of mine. I actually had him on over the weekend, Jamie Belasia. He's an attorney, and he and his wife put together this, it was what do they call it, it was like a citizens rights training course. Where basically, like, you know, a group of citizens came and they went through kind of like a training course to train them how to deal with police. Because you can hear this stuff all the time, you can watch it on YouTube, but unless you actually kind of go through the exercise, a little bit of role playing, you don't know how to respond to police who are like really pushing you to get these questions answered, right? Or to get permission to search your car. And what was funny is they started this whole thing out where, you know, his wife, who's, you know, this small, nice, very not intimidating person, gets up at the front of the class and says, okay, we're getting ready to start. The very first thing we need everybody to do is take out your wallet, take out your driver's license, and pass them all to the front. And everybody takes their driver's license out and passes it to the front. And she collects them all and says, you guys all just failed the class. like, who am I? Why are you giving me your driver's license? Like, you have no obligation to do so. This has private information. It has your address, all this other stuff. Why would you do that? And it's to prove that we're conditioned, you know, to, you know, she's got some sort of an authority as like a teacher would, because she's standing at the front of the class, but it's, you know, we don't question authority as like, you know, that was like the big thing. Like, I had a few older people tell me this when I was growing up, but it was very rare to hear it. Question authority. We don't do that. That's got to be your next book.
Well, so that I'm definitely, and in terms of books, the topics I have right now are the Don't Hurt People and Don't Take Their Toys, which is property rights, The Happy Porcupine, which is self defense, a book called Benjamin Gets Bossy, which is about not bossing people around, and then a book, Ruby Means Business, which is about entrepreneurship. So I had to make it a girl. I had to give it that little feminist twist. I apologize for that.
No worries.
I had to have a female entrepreneur. I just had to do it. I gave her curly hair too, but it's not, the character is not me.
sure.
So she's really not. So anyway, but I also have lesson plans, And this was actually super challenging to do. I did one on self-ownership, and I had to, you don't want to tell 5-year-olds or 6-year-olds or 7-year-olds not to listen to anyone, because like they have to listen when you tell them to brush their teeth, or it's kind of like I had to do a mix of you have the ultimate decision of when to consent, but also you have, there are family decisions. Like you might have to, oh God, I hope that I'm not gonna like upset any like anti-vax people or something, but like your parents might take you to get some shots, and like you might have to get those shots. And it's like it's a very hard balance to strike, right? Like when you're teaching it to kids, because they don't have 100% self-ownership yet. They just physically can't. I mean, they can't like drive a car. And yet you're trying to introduce these concepts that are like, don't, be skeptical of authority, don't always listen, but listen to your mom and dad, right? So it was very tricky, but I thought I struck an okay balance. I mean, I couldn't, it wasn't something I could really do philosophically. I had to just do it pragmatically, and wrote, family decisions, as an exception to self-ownership. Like sometimes you make decisions as a family, and yeah, I'd actually be curious to hear your thoughts on that, because it's, how do how it's just a challenging question of how do you take this philosophical ideal thing, which is libertarianism, and then apply it in a real life way when it comes to kids. Like, I don't know if there is an ideal answer. I just hope to
It's,
introduce those
yeah,
topics.
it's, I mean, so I'm not a parent, so I mean, I do have 2 dogs, and I'm totally a nap violator, because they're in captivity, they're not free to go. I kind of look at that stuff, and I'm kind of like, man, is this right? Should I just let them loose, or are they going to turn into street dogs and starve to death and get sick? So there are a lot of things to consider, right? Let's say you have a 2-year-old kid and you want to go on a family vacation. Do you have to ask the 2-year-old for permission? And if he doesn't want to go, do you leave him in the house, for a week, and then he's going to starve to death because he doesn't know how to make food? So I think there is a really tough gray area when it comes to that type of stuff. And like you said with vaccinations, I know there's I'm kind of on the fence about that one myself, because I know, there's my opinion is that there's way too many of those things. Maybe some of them do work and maybe some of them are necessary, but you don't need 100,000 of them, by the time a baby's 3 months old. But at the same time, how do you determine which ones you do want to give, and does the baby have any consent in that? If they're 1 month old, if they're 6 months old, 2 years, like they don't really understand what that is. They don't understand the dangers, so it's not like they can really make an informed decision. So yeah, I think those things are really tricky. But I have heard a few podcasts from, and I know some people are going to totally cringe when they hear the name, Stefan Molyneux.
Oh yeah.
And like so and like I know, okay, the guy's not perfect, which is
No, but on parenting, I think on
he's
parenting, he has some really great ideas.
yeah
I'll give him that.
I heard some really interesting insights where, one of them was, if you so okay so if you want your kids to do something, what some parents will do is they'll say, do this or else I'm going to take away your phone or your PlayStation or something. But what you're doing with that is you condition them so that when they go out into the real world, that it's acceptable behavior to do that, especially when it's coming from government. So now the government can say, we don't like that you don't have that your taillights are out, so we're going to take your entire car away. That becomes an acceptable concept now because you've been raising them to think that way. And I've met I've met I was interviewing people coming out of a courthouse one time, just like random interviews, and this one guy said he was there because he was charged with reckless driving because a police officer was driving behind him in an unmarked, one of those total blackout cars, was driving behind him, tailgating him, and he started switching lanes so that the guy could go around. He didn't know it was a cop. And so, then the cop started switching lanes and sticking behind him. So he got scared and he sped up a little bit. And next thing you know, he gets pulled over. Once he starts speeding, the cop just waits for him to speed up. They pull him over. They give him a ticket for reckless driving, for switching lanes so many times. And this guy comes out of the courthouse, and I asked him, you know, he tells me the story, and I ask him, do you feel that, like, you were wronged by this? Do you feel like you were ripped off, that this is an injustice? And he goes, well, I mean, I was speeding, so I don't know. I kind of feel like I deserve it. And I was just like, what? That makes absolutely no sense. You were responding to a threat on your life, potentially. You had no idea what was going on. That doesn't make any sense for you to even believe that. And yet he did, because of the way that we're conditioned.
It's bizarre, the machinations of the mind as a result of government schooling. Just bizarre.
Yeah.
You hear the strangest things.
Yeah, it is. It's so weird. But yeah, so it's, you know, I think there's a gray area, but I think it is really important to make sure that you don't become too overbearing with kids.
Right.
Because you don't want, because, you know, if you treat that, if you train them to believe everything you say and to do everything you say, you're going to condition them to do the same thing that, you know, basically the government says. And if you look at the way government, you know, government comes around and says, you need a permit for that. Do I really? Does anyone stop and question that? Like, okay, you're telling me I do, but the First Amendment says I can stand here with my camera and I can film you and I can say whatever I want and I can hold up a sign, and you're telling me I can't. I need a permit for it. You know, at what point do you say that's bullshit? Or, you know, do you just say, oh, okay, yes, officer, I'll do whatever you say?
Well, I think, so here's what I think our legal system tries to do, and obviously does it quite imperfectly, but maybe better than other countries, is the reality is, like, when it comes to kids and their self-ownership rights, or, like, their rights to, you know, to make decisions, in reality, it seems to me there's, like, a gradation, and at some point there's a level of maturity where they should basically have full contractual rights and full, you know, right now, you know, someone under 18, they either can't make a contract or they can make a contract, but that contract is voidable. So you imagine someone could be a child Disney star, but in some ways, even though they're acting in a way that's probably more mature and working harder than probably many adults, they don't have full legal rights. And I think in reality, it just varies on levels of maturity. So, like, I think there are probably 14-year-olds that are capable of making fantastic decisions, better decisions than some 30-year-olds. But, you know, what we do is we have a bright line rule and, you know, we just do it the same for everyone, which is ridiculous because some 18-year-olds, you know, don't have the mental capacity of 18-year-olds, but we just kind of decide that's going to be arbitrarily the line and, you know, whatever. And obviously, and what's crazy is that line is increasing and increasing with regards to different things and, like, how we assign people responsibilities, just getting older and older. The way I try to approach it in the books is, I mean, in the lesson plans, is kind of as a gradation, just to introduce the topic, like, you're going to get more rights as you mature, but you should know that you have rights. Like, you have rights, and maybe you don't feel like you do, and maybe you don't have control of everything. And the older you get, the more responsibilities you get and the more rights you get and whatever. And to me, that was the best way to kind of approach that. And I just imagined how I would approach it with my own kids. But I'm sure there's a lot of parents who would do it really differently and, you know, just kind of have, like, a free range kids type thing and let their kids make their own decisions, which I don't know. I mean, it's all interesting experiment to see how it all plays out. I mean, I don't know what the right answer is.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where there might not be a quote unquote right answer. There's like, what are you going to do when you grow up? There's no right answer to that. You can do anything.
Right, and to some extent, it's what's hoisted upon you, too. So, like, 14-year-olds act like 14-year-olds today because they're allowed to. Maybe 100 years ago, they didn't have that luxury to have such a prolonged adolescence, and maybe they had to act more like adults do today. So that's kind of, maybe it's a self-reinforcing thing. And actually, that's interesting, because maybe the more we explain to kids the fact that they do have rights, maybe it creates the rights also. Like maybe the speech creates the right. I think it's interesting because, okay, like let's like think about like how Democrats are very into consent, right? It's all, you know, they're like very Me Too. It's like everyone's Me Too and it's all consent, consent. But they never get to the root of like why consent matters. Like to like there's like this shallow view of like if you are sexually touched and it's, you know, first of all, you can't consent to that because you're underage. But, you know, somehow it's like consent is very important when it comes to sexual things. Doesn't seem that important when it comes to anything else. And I, like, I find that fascinating. Right. And so like, I have a whole lesson plan on consent and it's not about sexual touching at all. It's literally just about consent. Obviously that includes that. But like, why not teach kids, like, why does it matter whether they consent to anything? Like it matters because you own your body. You own your, like the fruit of your labor. And you own your body and you have the right, like not to be touched in a way that you want to be touched. But like, why should that just be assumed without the underlying, explanation?
I think that's a really important point. And I mean, like, so one of the things I do with my campaign is legalize pineapple pizza. And of course this is like, it's a metaphor for legalizing drugs because yeah, you don't like the pineapple pizza, but, so like the reality is like, you can have a conversation with this. 'Cause when you start talking about weed, like a lot of people will say, oh, weed's bad. I know pot smokers and they're all criminals and they're all thieves and, you know, crazy people. You know, it's, or with Vermin Supreme, I get into it with him over the free ponies, which, you know, which is really, you know, it's basically socialism. And I can talk to him about the economics of socialism and giving out free stuff. But what it does is it takes away the emotional involvement, because if you try to have a discussion with a socialist about free healthcare and all this other stuff, and you say, yeah, well, we can't have a system where healthcare is just given out for free because all these other things, they get really defensive because they're emotionally attached to the position that sick people need to be taken care of, which is understandable. But they're not, they can't get over that emotional side of the argument to the point about, okay, where are the resources going to come from that are going to provide healthcare? But when you're talking about giving away free ponies, then it's like, everyone's like, oh, okay, it's a joke. It's funny. It's fun. We'll have a fun conversation about, and they don't even know it, but about socialism or about pineapple pizza, about legalizing, you know, consumption of anything you want, putting whatever you want in your mouth that, you know, is it's food. It's not going to hurt anybody else by you eating this. What's the big deal? And so I think, you know, to your point about consent, when you talk about like, you know, whether it's, you know, rape or sexual harassment or those types of things, those are very, very deeply emotional, I guess, emotionally charged topics. But if you were to remove that from the conversation and say, you know, talk like maybe it's just holding hands, which I don't know, I guess in some of the Democratic circles, I think that's probably going too far. But, you know, maybe
that's way too far.
Yeah. you know, maybe I think I just saw an example in here actually as a toy. You know, if it's, you know, does someone have consent to play with another person's toy? And you get into, yeah, you exactly that. You have that discussion about consent and what it actually means instead of this like emotionally charged battle over something where both sides have already determined what their answer is based on not the underlying principle, but the outlying demands that they have of you know, what they want the underlying principles to mean so that it benefits their side of the discussion.
Right. Like everything comes out of kind of non-aggression and self-ownership. Right. And when you explain things that way, consent means so much more. And I think it's so much more protective of individuals. And therefore, let's say when you look at it from what liberals are concerned about, they're always concerned about minorities' rights and et cetera. And it's like individual rights are minority rights and they just don't make that connection. They just don't generalize things. Like they just don't see that if consent matters in this scenario, maybe those same principles mean that it should matter in every scenario, not just in the scenarios where it's, you know, politically expedient. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting because when you get to something towards socialism, I think I totally understand why socialism is like so attractive, and I kind of you know, it gets me thinking. A lot of libertarians, or some libertarians at least, would support like the basic income, or you know, probably plenty of libertarians think that, you know, no one, maybe we can implement a system where no one has to starve, right? Like, there's maybe you know, is the issue the government control, or is the issue like where do you get the resources? So for example, like if we have machines doing all of our farming and there's like public lands, and I'm getting into like futurism here, but if you have like public lands where you have like machines doing all the farming, and like maybe we just have a guarantee that like everyone gets food, and maybe no one is ever conscripted into that, right? So like no farmer is ever forced to work, right? And no person is ever forced to give up their lands. I mean, it's done on public lands. I mean, obviously there's people who are opposed to public lands, but let's not even get that far. Let's assume it's on already public land. And, you know, maybe we can have some sort of distribution if it doesn't violate anyone's consent, if you're not forcing anyone to work, if you're not, but to the extent that you are, like to the extent they're talking about like universal health care, you're conscripting a doctor to work. It's conscription.
Or you're stealing from somebody to pay the doctor, or
Right, or you're stealing from
some,
someone to pay the doctor. Maybe it takes until, what's it called when everything, I forget that word, when computers can just do stuff, the convergence.
yeah, I know what you're talking about. The singularity.
The singularity, like maybe once there's the singularity, we can have some aspects of, you know, maybe like if medicine is 100% done by robots, maybe we can have
Well. At that
some
point, we're gonna be injected into the matrix, and we're all gonna be turned into batteries. So,
right. I mean, but maybe that's our fate. Like maybe that's our destiny. Like maybe that's okay, but maybe as long as it violates consent, it's not the right thing to do. Just a
right.
thought. We're getting crazy here, but
Yeah. No. I mean, this is what, this is why I'm kind of attracted to like futuristic movies, and maybe this is why so many people are. And I mean, I took a philosophy class in college that was, I call it college, but it was really like, I mean, it was community college, so let's just face it,
it
it's
still
like
counts as college. That sometimes
it's
that's the best form of
advanced high
college.
school. But yeah, no, but it's you know, like I took philosophy. It was just one of those things, like I don't know what the hell I'm doing, so I'll take that. And we actually watched a lot of sci-fi movies and had like interesting philosophical discussions about them. Like Blade Runner was one of them. And like I thought this was really interesting. And like, you know, like I noticed that a lot of people watch all these sci-fi movies, and there is like a very interesting kind of undertone about this. Like, you know, there's a lot of futurism to it, but there's also like the way that it abstracts kind of these moral questions. You know, and I think a lot of them, because they're futuristic, a lot of them have to do with like robots and things, but it's you know, that really abstracts these moral questions. Like if a robot is able to like say, hey, I have feelings, don't hurt me, and you hurt the robot, are you violating its consent? Are you
Yes.
you know, that sort of thing. And it's
Yes. The
What
answer is
makes the
yes.
yeah and like well what makes you know, some people say, oh, it's okay to capture certain animals and keep them in captivity and raise them for food, but it's not okay to do that to other animals. What's the difference? Is it the level of intelligence? Is it that animal's ability to say, you know, I don't consent to this, you know, whereas some animals might just say, oh yeah, I'll go along with this, I don't really care, I don't know what's going on. Does that make any difference at all? And you know, where's that line drawn? Because of course you have plants, which, you know, okay, if we stop eating animals, we're going to eat plants, but plants are alive too. And there's even evidence to show that they communicate with each other, they have emotions, they react to having their branches cut off. You know, is are they, you know, they're not considered as they're disposable because they can't speak English to tell us, hey, that hurts. You know, where's the line, and is there an actual, you know, moral question to that? And so, like, I think, like, you know, going back to you getting into like all this futuristic stuff, I think all that stuff really has, you know, a valid place in asking all these moral questions. Because, you know, if we don't ask those moral questions, then, you know, we're just following orders. We're just believing what the previous generations believed based on what they handed to us. And we're not advancing our intellect or anything like that. So I don't know. That's my two cents on that.
Well, what was interesting was here in California, there was a ballot proposal, I think it was called Prop 12, that was about like animals. And treatment of first I think part of it was like banning veal, and then part of it was, you know, how animals have to be housed. And what I found it really interesting that the Libertarian Party here in California actually actively did not take a stance one way or the other, whereas you would think that the Libertarian Party would say, okay, well, we're opposed to this because we're just like, we're opposed to all laws and whatever. And I also find it equally fascinating how many libertarians are actually vegan or vegetarian. It's like an outstanding number. Like, I don't know if you've noticed this too. There's just a lot of, and that's what I love about libertarianism. People, I've never met a group of people where it's as much like be the change you want to see in the world. Like, you would think by the way that libertarians are painted, it's like we're just the most evil, horrible people. And it's just like, no, we try to be intellectually consistent. And so that intellectual consistency can extend to animals. Like, it's a perfectly valid view to see it that way. Like, especially with like elephants and like, you know, like dolphins and whatever. Like, especially with things that are so close to us in their consciousness. So yeah, it's. I mean, like, it reminds me of the. What is it? Is it Peter Singer, The Expanding Circle? It's a book. Basically, it's like it's expanding our view of, you know, what we view as like ourselves, you know, kind of extending rights. And to me, that's actually like super libertarian. Although, I mean, on the other hand, I can understand someone thinking it's unlibertarian to want to like ban veal. I get that. But to me, it's kind of libertarian in some way to want to ban veal.
Right.
It's tricky. Doesn't have a right or wrong answer.
Yeah, it's you know, I don't know. I think some libertarians would say, oh, well, you can't ban veal, but what you should do is arm the animals and let them defend themselves. So,
that's true.
You know, and that goes back into the question of, you know, are these animals, you know, are they food because they can't defend themselves? And I think some people,
right, or say, like, at least even if you assume they're food, even if you say hunting is okay, even if you say killing them is okay, can we at least agree that maybe torturing them is not okay?
Oh, sure.
Right.
Yeah, I think
like
that's...
you could, I would feel fine with a law that says you can't, you know, torture any, even if it's not like the most conscious animal, but certainly like cows are pretty conscious. Like, mm-hmm. They can be your friends. Like, I don't know. Like,
yeah, I've seen some pretty advanced emotional responses from them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, they have a pretty boring life. So, you know,
yeah, but they probably think our life is boring. We're cows are like eating and like having the best time. And we're like sitting here talking about like philosophy. They probably think that's the most boring thing that a cow can imagine.
Yeah. They're out there like gossiping all day.
Yeah. Talking so
but yeah, I think that's, you know, that's totally, I think that would definitely be at least a libertarian first step, is to say, you know, torturing all this like captivity, like in really small confined spaces and everything else is terrible. Yeah. Well, okay. So, where do we go to get these books? So you've got one book out now, and you're going to have the others up as ebooks pretty soon, and audiobook, right?
Yeah. Yep. So I just want to say one thing on behalf of the ebooks and audiobooks and all of that. So this book already has this book and the ebook and the audiobook. And I know that because these books are targeted at such young kids, I know that ebooks might not be everyone's primary choice. But, you know, like kids have like the iPads and all that stuff. They come out formatted really nicely for, you know, all of those things. Like the ebook right now is in it's in a PDF, but if you need a different format, like if you download the ebook and you need a different format, I have a few different formats. Like if you just sent me, like my email is everywhere all over the website. So like I could, like if you prefer a Kindle format, actually you can buy it on Amazon, or I can, if you just get it from the website, I'm happy to send you the Kindle format. But either way, the ebooks, if you're watching this and you're just like, okay, I think this is a good idea, I really just want to support this, It really, really helps us if you get the ebooks because the printing costs right now, like I'm still trying to get like the perfect balance, and basically we're selling these barely at cost for the print versions. And do you want to hold up the book to just show? Because it's a really small book. Like it's not it's kind of like yeah, like you could see it by size. It's a small book. It's short. It has to be short. It's for little kids. But the printing costs are still substantial because we're not really doing this at any kind of scale, and I'm totally self-funded and et cetera. If you buy the ebooks, it really, really helps offset those costs, and then it will help me print more books in the future. And then the more followers I get, and the more whatever, the more everything, I could scale this. So that's really, really helpful. So if you're willing to do it that way, that's great. And then the print books will roll out as quickly as I can roll them out. And then the other thing is that there's lesson plans on there too, which also like anything that you get that's electronic really helps offset the cost and helps making the book printing the books more possible. But then on top of that, I have like this long-term vision of turning this into like a subscription-based kind of cartoon service. So we've done one cartoon already. They're short. But that one is based off of this book, so it's Don't Hurt People and Don't Take Their Toys. So you can find that if you look at Little Libertarians on YouTube. But what I'm trying to do is gain as much of a following as possible to make those cartoons economically feasible because it's super expensive to make a cartoon. So that's just kind of like my if you're looking, I've had people email me and be like, "How can I support you? I don't even have kids. How can I support you?" We have a Patreon, so if you want to be a patron, that would be great. We have like I don't know, three, four patrons. So like if I could get to like 10, you could make my day. But that would be really good. But yeah, buying the ebooks and just the regular books, everything, us sharing with your friends, all of that is super, super helpful. And I think we're actually making good product. So as you know, as time goes on, we'll be able to scale more and like hopefully I can get the books to people cheaper and et cetera. Oh, that's
yeah, that sounds really awesome. And so we're gonna put a link to underneath this to the website. It is littlelibertarians.com, but there's gonna be a link down here so that you can go check those out. Yeah, I mean, this looks really awesome. And I mean, it sounds like you've already got, you know, all kinds of different avenues going with the actual media on that. I was actually just gonna recommend, hey, why don't you get a cartoon going? Because, you know, that could be like an awesome thing to, you know, I mean, not that I love recommending for people to sit their kids down in front of the TV and just have the TV going all day, but, you know, that's, you know, this could be better than Sesame Street,
yeah.
as far as
And kids
reaching out.
like the cartoons. I was showing them at I took them to Pork Fest, and a lot of the parents were like, "Oh, my kids don't watch cartoons," and like whatever. And they did. But I'm totally with you. Like I'm not into like TV for kids, but they're really short. They're like, you know, it's like 1 to 2 minutes. So if it's just if you're gonna show your kid anything, you might as well show a cute thing, and then there's songs and everything. So we have like a cartoon, a song, we have a nursery rhyme, and I'd like to do all of the stuff and try to keep it as non-propagandistic as I can. It's more about like getting those values, but like if you can play a cartoon where you know your kid's learning about property rights, I mean, what can be better than that?
I just had a thought and I just lost
Oh, sorry, cut you
it.
off.
No. I mean, it came from what you were just saying, but yeah. I mean, I think this is a really awesome project. And yeah, I hope this really goes far.
I want a book in the hands of every child.
That would be awesome. And so, well, I'll be talking to you about like, you know, doing some more marketing and stuff with this. Because of course I've got my store and I'm working with a few other projects that, you know, this is one of the things that for some reason libertarians are, you know, we're always going around saying like, hey, everyone needs to be an entrepreneur and, you know, free markets and everything. And then for some reason, you know, we kind of don't always hit the mark when it comes to marketing ideas that are really great like this. So we're actually working together with a lot of people to make sure that we can bring these to market into higher quantities and everything else. And this is a totally awesome project. You know, that could totally reach out outside of the libertarian circle, because these are, you know, really valuable things for any kid to learn. And, you know, especially when you have it framed in a way that's like totally not offensive to anybody, you know, Democrat or Republican, It's definitely, you know, I can see that going a lot further. Awesome. Well, is there anything else? Are there any future plans that you have that you want to talk about, or I don't know how much you're keeping a big secret.
There's no secrets. I'm trying to do a holiday book. Actually, well, first let me say one thing. If someone wants to get it through you, if they use the coupon code taxation is theft, all lowercase, they'll get 40% off any products on the site. So that's one thing. So it's a very good stocking stuffer. Although maybe don't roll it up and put it in the stocking. I don't know. It might not. Maybe that won't be
Yeah,
good for the book. I don't know.
when you gave me this one at the convention, I was like, okay, does this fit in any of my pockets? And I know you were like looking at me, giving me the evil eye, and then you even told me later, you
Like,
better
don't
not.
bend it. This is a
Yeah.
very this is philosophy for children. Just don't bend it. Just keep it flat. Yeah, so it's a very good stocking stuffer. I think it's very cute. I think if you have liberal relatives, it's kind of a fun, annoying thing to buy them. And then if you have libertarian relatives or friends, it's like a wonderful thing to buy them. So everyone wins. Like, if you're like one of those liberal tiers people, you can win with this. If you're one of the just a nice person who wants to give a nice gift, you can win. And so that's that. And so we're trying to do a holiday book, but we're not gonna have it in print by the holidays. It's just not realistic. We're gonna have an ebook, hopefully. So that's the other thing. And then any announcements? I mean, support me on Patreon, because if I get patrons, then we will have more cartoons soon. I'm being a little bit cautious. I'm self-funding everything, so I'm just not gonna be self-funding like cartoon after cartoon after cartoon. I might do one or two more, but I really, really need support if I'm gonna be doing cartoons, and so I really, really need this to grow. And the other cool thing that I will say is the first two times we put the books on sale, they sold out, which was like for a libertarian product, I was just really shocked. Like, I never think that anything I'm doing is gonna be like that. You know, whatever, like that's such a crazy thing. But yeah, it did. So they're actually on back order, and we're supposed to get the next shipment of books today. So you can
Wow.
order them today. Yeah.
Awesome. And actually that so this gave me an idea. Can you do any like bulk orders? So like if somebody wants to buy like I mean because they're small, I would think you might be able to do something like if somebody wants to get 50 or 100 of these, either to give out at you know stocking stuffers or at events to put into gift bags or to donate to schools or you know school libraries, anything like that. That sounds like that might be a good way to at least get a lot of copies out there.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you want to order like 50 of these or 100 of these, I will get them to you at cost. You know, like to me, like if someone's going to be putting the effort to like give out 50 of these books and make sure 50 people get these books, I will give them to you at cost. Because like to me, like the value of having 50 kids have the book, like that's amazing to me. Now what the cost is varies because it depends on how big the order is. So I've been ordering like 200 at a time, because I'm just not going to order like thousands and thousands of books, but I did get through 200 and just ordered another 200. The other thing is I'd like to get them in hardcover. So it's just like, it's not feasible to get them in hardcover unless I'm ordering a lot of them. It's going to cost like 15, I'm going to have to sell them at like $15, $20 per book, which seems high. So right now we're selling these at $8 per book, but you know, we have all kinds of promotions, and so if you'll get I think it was 40% off if you use the taxation as theft. But even that, like I said, it's barely cutting it. But yeah, if you want to do a bulk order, just get in touch. It's Dori, Dori, at littlelibertarians.com. And I would love to facilitate that. If you want to make a big donation through Patreon, you just want to like support the cause, that would be amazing. I mean, I could tell you exactly how it will be allocated. Like, if you want to donate any amount of money, I'll be like, okay, this amount is going to like such and such cartoon. It's everything has specific costs, and I'm just trying to do it in the smartest way possible and scale.
Awesome. That sounds great. All right. Well, I think we're at about time for today, but it's been really awesome talking to you. And I really hope that this book, I mean, it's already sounds like it's selling really well. So I hope to see that success continue and hopefully run into these in random weird places sometimes. Like, hey, you have that book at the library already.
Yes, that would be awesome.
That would be awesome. So, all right. What is taxation?
It's theft, man.
All
it
right.
is theft.
I will see you at probably the next convention if I don't see you before that.
I'll see you.
All right.
All right. Have a good night.
You too.
Bye.